Hey, this is Thomas Q. Jones, former UVA All-American running back, and you're listening to The Jerry Ratcliffe Show. Wahoo wah.
Welcome to another edition of The Jerry Ratcliffe Show podcast with my co-host, Chris Graham. And it's our honor to bring in one of my favorite guys of all time, and I'm sure one of yours as well, legendary Virginia quarterback, Sean Moore. Sean, how are you, brother?
I am absolutely fabulous. And really appreciate how you guys having me on.
Well, thanks for making some time for us, and happy Thanksgiving to you and yours as we head into this holiday weekend. And it's funny how this Virginia Tech Virginia game has almost become part of the Thanksgiving.
I know. It's funny, you know, Jerry. Think back, my first 2 years at UVA, the game was played, you know, in the middle of the season or early in the season. 89, it was the second game of the year. So it's funny how it's evolved now into the final game rivalry. So that's kind of nice to see.
Yeah, I think most people like it like this. I remember your coach, George Welsh, wasn't so crazy about the timing of it. He didn't feel like it should be played on the last game of the regular season. He just wanted to play it earlier because he thought the –
right.
It was putting a lot of pressure on both teams, but and I guess it does really, because sometimes you have to win that game to become bowl eligible or to win the Coastal Division or various factors. But it's turned into, even though it's not recognized nationally as a huge rivalry, it certainly regionally, it's doesn't get much bigger than this.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
For those of you who aren't familiar with Sean, some of the newbies, he set almost every record by a Virginia quarterback during his time of up until 1990, his senior year, when he brought he helped lead Virginia to the number one ranking in the nation, and in 89, one of only two Virginia ACC championships. And yeah, what else can be said? That it's a lot of people consider him, and as do I, the greatest quarterback in Virginia history. Just because of all the things you guys accomplished as a team and your numbers on top of that. Looking back on your career, Sean, what are your proudest moments as one of Virginia's captains and certainly the quarterback who broke records and just got incredible things done?
You know, people talk a lot about our 89 and 90 team and the fact that we were the first team to win the ACC championship, and then the next year expectations super high. It's just wonderful to be affiliated with those two teams in particular. 89 and 90 were special because there was a lot of accomplishments. You know, first ACC championship, first time to be ranked number one multiple weeks, playing in two New Year's Day bowl games, Sugar Bowl, following up the Citrus Bowl. So it was a lot of firsts in Virginia football history. So it's just really neat to be affiliated with it and to be one of the leaders. A 2 year co-captain was special for me because I had a lot of guys that looked up to me and saw me as kind of the leader of those programs. So that's just really the biggest accomplishment is also to still be tied in to these guys that I played with. You know, unfortunately, some of them has left us, you know, guys like Daryl Hammond, who's one of my favorite all-time teammates. But, you know, I'm still close to Ray Savage, Tony Covington, Derek Boyd, Marcus Wilson, Ray Roberts, Chris Slade, Terry Kibble, all those guys, we talk on a regular basis. So now that it's Tech Week, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of communication this week as we get ready for Saturday's big game.
Yeah, and another accomplishment that's often overlooked is in 89, it was Virginia's only 10-win season in program history. That was a pretty big deal.
The only? I thought 95. 95 only won 9 games?
Yeah.
Wow. That's if you think about it, that's a hell of an accomplishment, you know. 10 games back then when you're playing every ACC team and you win your out-of-conference games that year, the losses were Clemson and Notre Dame. So, you know, even today, you say Clemson and Notre Dame, those are still perennial powers. in college football. So those are the two games we lost that year. So and that's a pretty incredible feat. You know, I, for some reason, I thought 95 won 10 games. I guess I'm just tying them into ACC champions as well. So I assume 10 wins. But 89 was special because to lose that first game and then just go on a win streak was pretty incredible.
Yeah, really. Notre Dame was defending national champions exactly. Coming into that game in the Meadowlands, sold out the first game of the season in late August. That was pretty good. And they had a lot of those players back from that national championship team. So, yeah, to get on a roll after that and win 10 games, that was pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
A lot of people probably aren't aware of your new role with UVA. You want to tell them a little bit about what you're doing now?
Yeah, I'm really excited. Fourth time back at UVA between going to school as a student, living there, doing my time playing professional football, and then back there coaching. And now I'm back in really a unique role, but one that I feel like I can thrive in. Associate AD for Major Gifts, really specifically raising money for the master plan, and super excited about the direction that we're going. Jerry Capone and I are working closely together with Carla Williams to really get this building built, this new football operations building for the University of Virginia football program. And once that's completed, once we can get that completed, we will part three of the master plan will be to redo the McHugh Center for our Olympic sports program. So I'm super excited. I think once we break ground on football operations, we'll feel like there's a level of success because, you know, that'll be behind us. But the next task is to get McHugh Center redone, revamped, and prepared for Olympic sports. So I'm excited to be back in Charlottesville. It's required a lot of travel and a lot of engagement with football alumni and UVA alums across the country. I've always been in a position where I've had to travel. So it's a little harder when you get older, but I'm super excited. And just, I love being part of the program.
You're not old, but, but travel is a hassle. I tell you, I don't know.
That was hard. It's hard. Especially in this current climate we're in now, you know, it's hard.
Oh yeah. I don't envy you in that part at all. Yeah, that's exciting for the future. I don't know about you, but I go back to 82. I started covering Virginia when George, same year George got here. And so every time I walk over to the McHugh Center and where U-Haul used to be, and I see the practice fields and walk on them sometimes for interviews of today's coaches and players, and it just blows my mind. I'm still not used to seeing all that stuff where U-Haul and everything used to be. And
oh, I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. I know. Like, you walk out on the practice fields now, and they're fabulous fields. You know, part one of the master plan, phase one. But it's pretty incredible that, you know, University Hall is gone, and now there's two beautiful practice facilities. Fields that occupy where University Hall used to be. The cage is gone. You know, there's so much construction going on the university campus. It's crazy. It's absolutely amazing.
Looking for a great dining experience in Charlottesville? Look no further than the Aberdeen Barn. The barn has been family owned and operated since 1965, with Terry and Angela providing great atmosphere and mouth-watering food at Virginia's big time steakhouse. Enjoy the fine dining or relax in the Sportsman's Bar, a fantastic place to wind down and socialize, surrounded by flat-screen televisions tuned to the latest sporting events. You never know who you might bump into at the Aberdeen Barn, where all the greatest Cavaliers have dined over the decades and keep coming back for the delicious menu and good times. Check it out online at aberdeenbarn.com or call 434-296-4600. 3-0.
Let's move on a little bit to this week and this year's team. A lot of people are saying that this is the greatest offense in UVA history. They have accumulated thus far 5,696 total yards, which is the most in program history. And they're up there in points. They're probably going to break if they haven't already. I couldn't find that number right before the podcast. They're probably going to break the points record if they haven't already. I know it's an exciting offense because of the mostly because of the trigger man and some of the receivers, but I still think that the offense that you guys ran in 89 and 90, particularly in 90, was the best offense at this to this point, because you guys could do so much more than just pass the ball. You had just a multifaceted offense. I don't know if I've ever seen an offense shown that could do all the things that that offense could do. And not only that, but you guys could run the ball. This offense really doesn't run the ball.
Right. I think people get mesmerized by numbers. And if you just look at the college game is so much different now. Everyone is throwing the ball around. You know, there's a couple running backs that have, you know, created a buzz this year, the kid at Michigan State. But I think if you just look at the way the sport is played now, particularly at the collegiate level, it's a very passing oriented philosophy for most teams. Most college teams, I mean, everyone's playing 12 games, the 13th game, the bowl game counts. If you go to college football playoff, those game counts. So it's amazing now that the numbers are super inflated. So when you look at a kid's numbers, particularly say if you're a pro scout and you're looking at a guy's numbers who played in a bowl game, played in a conference championship game, went to the college football playoff, he's playing 14, 15 games. Yeah. And all those games count for statistics. I like the idea of being balanced as well. You know, you go back to, you know, it's funny. I tell people this all the time. In college, at the University of Virginia, in 5 years of playing football for George Welch, I never took a shotgun snap. Didn't even know what it was until I got to the pros. Wow. So that may show you how outdated I am and how much of a dinosaur I am. Never took a shotgun snap until I got to play for Dan Reeves of the Denver Broncos. So it's just a very different game. You know, we wanted to be 50-50. We wanted to have an approach where a defense didn't know we were passing or running the ball. That's when you're balanced. Not to take any thing from Armstrong, because he's had a phenomenal year. His numbers they're video game like numbers, and I'm a huge fan. I love what they've accomplished this year, but you know, like I said, I love what we were. We were balanced. We were able to run the ball. We were able to throw the ball. There were games where, you know, you had a 200-yard rusher, and very few games where there was 300 yards passing on my part, because I can count them on one hand. You know, maybe three times in my entire career at UVA that I throw for 300 times.
Wow. That's kind of mind-blowing, really, if you stop and
think. Yeah, for sure, right.
Hey, by the way, guys, I've got the numbers here. Jerry, I've 442 points for the 1990 team in 11 games, 40.1 points per game. This year's team, 391 points through 11 games, 35.5. Now, the 1894 team, just throw this out there.
that was a hell of a team.
Back in 1894, they averaged 41.4 points a game. So we have to talk about that as well.
Yeah, got to show them some love.
I didn't cover that team.
That was back before the forward pass. So
where were they playing? Lambethville?
I'm not sure if Lambeth was even around then.
No, good point. Good point.
Oh, wow. Yeah, there was. I remember interviewing a guy. It was the 100th anniversary of Virginia's football, but whatever that was. It was back in the 90s, I think, or maybe it might have been in the 80s. But anyway, I interviewed a guy that played on the 1915 team, the one that beat Yale, upset Yale up at the Yale Bowl. And they had a running back on there who held a lot of UVA records up until the 90s. What was that guy's name? I'll think of it. But anyway, this guy said he was the greatest running back he'd ever seen. But they were just killing people too. They were scoring like 60 and 70 points on just about everybody back in those days.
Wow.
But, that was a different world of football. Just like today's game is a lot different than your game. But
absolutely.
But George Welsh told me one time that that 90 offense was the best he had ever seen. And that included a Penn State offense that had Lydell Mitchell and Franco Harris in the backfield. And I think Joe Huffnagel at quarterback, who was pretty decent. Just because you guys could do so many different things. I mean, didn't you guys run some option and some pistol?
What today they call 10 personnel, four wides. We ran four wides. We ran 11 personnel, which is three wides. We ran 13 personnel, which is three tight ends. We ran 23 personnel, which is two tight ends, a fullback, and two backs. So like a wishbone. You got to credit Gary Tranquil for that, because the dude had an incredible mind for offense. And then to come in my second year and implement that and go through quarterback Scott Sekules, myself, and then Matt Blunden. Tranquil's a genius. He still is. He's one of my favorite all-time offensive-minded football coaches.
Yeah, I agree. I used to marvel at him. We had him on when I used to do the radio show at WINA. We had him on, it was toward the end of that, but he's living up in Michigan, but in between two lakes, I think. Or he's,
oh, wow.
You know, he's happy there. He can go fishing.
Oh, yeah. I bet he's watching. I bet he watches a lot of football on TV, too.
I bet he does, too. But, that was one of the greatest offensive minds I've ever been around.
He was spectacular. Yeah.
Since we're talking about Brennan Armstrong, he's a tough kid, just like you were. You could fight through pain and through injury. How tough was it for him, last week at Pitt, to come off 3 weeks of not playing and with cracked or broken ribs and a flak jacket on and be able to throw for almost 500 yards?
It was almost like he didn't miss a beat. And quite honestly, I don't think if you didn't know he was hurt, you wouldn't think he had gotten hurt, because he came out just like his typical self, like he's done the previous games before, where he just put up crazy numbers. I didn't see any ill effects from any injury. As he moved around, he threw the ball, even actually took off and ran a couple times. This just goes to show you his toughness. There's a certain level of mental toughness you have to have to know you've been injured and go out and play and just play freely. And so I think, you know, he proved a lot of people, any doubters that might think he's not a tough guy, I think he proved that last week.
I mean, as a quarterback, you're going to take somewhat of a beating every game anyway. Because
absolutely, no doubt.
Did you ever have to wear a flak jacket? Do you ever have bruised ribs or anything like that?
Mm-hmm. I got hurt in a William & Mary game my second, third or fourth year, and had to wear a jacket the rest of the way. Hated it, but it's just things you have to do to protect yourself.
How cumbersome are those things?
Very much so. I moved around a lot, probably more so than Armstrong. So I always felt like it was weighing me down. You know, guys now, they play without lower pads. You know, it's illegal, but they get away with it because officials don't say anything. But back then, you was trying to get the smallest pads you could because you didn't want to slow yourself down on the field. So any constraints like a flap jacket or, you know, bigger shoulder pads or thigh pads would always, you know, the mindset was, I don't want to slow myself down.
And back in your day, the guys taking care of you were the legendary Frank McHugh and Joe Geek. They probably just told you to suck it up and rub some dirt on it, right?
Exactly.
UVA Orthopedics and Sports Medicine boasts one of the finest teams of doctors in the country, and they're right here in Charlottesville to not only provide care for the University of Virginia athletic teams, but also the Charlottesville and Central Virginia communities. UVA Orthopedics has been a proud sponsor of the Jerry Ratcliffe Show for the past 2 years, with numerous team members featured in weekly segments where doctors share great insight into various sports injuries, what causes them, how to treat them, and recovery time. Their team of experts are there for you and offer the best care to solve your health problems and get you back on your feet. Let their team of specialists get you back in the game.
With your skill set, obviously, from your playing days, translate yourself to being able to play in this offense. I can hear it already. talk about how you fit into this offense. I mean, with your ability to read the field, your mobility, your arm, I mean, and then maybe even bring Herman Moore with you too into this offense. Oh, how do you God. Think you've done?
You know, it's hard to say. The crazy part is, you know, these kids today, they practice like they play. So, you know, I go to practice on Thursdays and I bring alums out and I watch practice. And there's a lot of 7-on-7. There's a lot of throwing the ball around. So I get to see that. You know, coming up when I did, you know, there's an inside period, 9-on-7, where you're working specifically on the run game. You're working on different variations of the run game. So it's, you know, it's just very different. You know, Pat Skelton was always a treat for me. But now that's the game. It's the game's all about, you know, slinging it all over the field. So I don't know. I probably could have put up some pretty special numbers as well. But, you know, just think about when I finished playing and years later, those numbers that I had over the course of a 3-4 year period, you know, they were still there for a long while. So it's something to take some pride in.
Oh, no question. You had some special receivers, obviously, but I don't know that Virginia's ever had as many receivers, quality receivers, as they have right now. They've got like 4 guys with over 500 yards receiving or something, which I don't think anybody else in the country has.
That's special. That is. I said that to someone recently that that's a tremendous, he's got all kinds of weapons between the tight end, fabulous receivers. And then just think, you know, the best receivers I even playing this year. So yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. And these guys, they didn't keep this stat back up well. And just until recently in college, but I mean, Thompson has over 329 yards after the catch, Kemp about 300 after the catch, Wicks 270 or 80 something after the catch, Woods 150 something, Henry like 100. These guys know what to do with it when they catch it.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing.
Steve Young once told me that when he played college football at BYU, obviously, that every time he dropped back, somebody was always open in college football. Did you find that to be kind of true?
I can't say so because, you know, I go back to Trank's offense being so complex. Right. You know, there's always a first, second, and third progression. And then when that third progression went there, the next move was to take off. So I wish I knew what some of these guys knew today to protect yourself in the long run. Always. You know, it's always the check down to the back or finding the outlet receivers. You know, that prolongs your career if you're able to do that. Think about Tom Brady. He throws more check downs than anybody in the game, particularly if it's the last minute of a drive. If you just notice, he's checking down to the back, you know, 50% of the time.
It's a nice luxury. How much freedom did Tranquil give you in terms of checking out of plays or doing an audible or did you just do it and not tell him about it?
No, the fifth year, there was quite a bit of freedom for me because he knew, being a fifth year senior, knowing the offense the way he did, I had my mindset was just like him. So I'll never forget one of the games he let me call the first half and he was flustered because he knew, like I thought, just like he did. So he thought I was going to go out and just sling it every play. And we're probably even more balanced than when he called the game. So that's one of the things I love about him is he had a lot of trust in me and he valued, you know, my opinion. And to let me go out and call a game like that was amazing.
That is amazing. You have a favorite George Wells story?
There's so many, man. You know, I was thinking about – seriously, they really are. I mean, I never will forget, because the memorial, you know, all the stories from all the former players. So we got together for 2 days because it was centered around the spring game. And it seems like that was forever ago now, but literally it was 3 years ago. There's just so many stories. Everyone has their own version of what, you know, their relationship was like with George. I can't say we had the closest relationship, but a two-year captain, I probably had more interaction with him than any player on the team during that time frame. So, and I just, I think that there was a certain respect he had for me, because, you know, he played me as a redshirt freshman, probably when I wasn't even ready to play. I never forget going into Georgia. We played Georgia between the hedges in Athens. First game of the year, Seeks was a fifth-year senior. I was a redshirt freshman. And we went out, I mean, 14-0, right on top of Georgia, shocked them. And George looked at me and told Trent, you know, put the redshirt freshman in. I'm like, it's 14-0. We're up. Are you kidding? Are you serious? And I went in the game and didn't have a clue what was going on. Didn't move the ball very well. And I think I had two series. Before you know it, it was 14-14. Georgia was back in it. I'll never forget reporters asking George, what was he thinking? And he was like, hey, I got to get this guy some playing time because he's a future of our program. And looking back on it, it may have been genius to get me in a game like that, because I went back in the fourth quarter and engineered a touchdown drive. But, you know, in today's game, the coach would get fired taking a quarterback out who's hot and is up 14-0 in that game. And you going to lose that game? Yeah, that wouldn't fly. That wouldn't fly in 2021.
No, not at all. I can just see the headlines in the social media now.
Oh, big time. Yeah, they crush him.
What do you think about Armstrong? We touched on him a little bit, but what do you like about him?
He's got a lot of grit, a lot of football savviness, and he's just a really accurate passer. I think that's what, you know, I was a huge fan of Bryce Perkins, got to know him really well. But if you just compare the two, Armstrong is significantly more accurate passer. The ball comes out of his hand, and it's always accurate in terms of where it needs to be for the receiver to catch the ball, whether he's Drake with a corner. He just does a fabulous job of putting the ball in the right place. Even the deep balls, throws an incredible deep ball. And I've always said, you know, having coached quarterbacks at the collegiate level and at several camps and working at the collegiate level or high school level, I've always thought it's super hard to coach a left-handed quarterback, because if you're right-handed, which most guys are, it's like you're teaching it backwards. You're teaching it the opposite way.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I can only recall having one left-handed quarterback in my days of coaching, and I hated it because I was like, man, you know, this ain't working for me. So for him, you know, to have a lefty doing what he's doing, the accuracy, the grit, the toughness, he's amazing. And I think people are starting to acknowledge that across the country. Because, you know, I can't tell you the number of times I've heard on SportsCenter where there's Scott Van Pelt saying, hey, you need to watch this guy because he's putting up some numbers and he's the real deal. He really is.
Assuming he comes back next year, Sean, which I think we can assume, we're not hearing anything otherwise right now, he would enter the season next year as in the Heisman conversation. You were in that conversation in 1990. You finished fourth in the voting ultimately. What advice would you have for him? As far as what it's like to be thought of in that way and the pressure you have to deal with. I mean, that for you, not only, you know, the team success being number one for 3 weeks, but then the Heisman conversation, that's a lot of pressure, I'm sure.
It is. But I think the one thing I like about him, the fact that he's super grounded, I think he would have a similar mindset as I had going into that 90 season. And that is, you know, I'm a team first player. Anything that I do is indicative and representative of this entire program. I think that's the mindset that really good leaders have. And I think that's the mindset that he has always portrayed. I think he would have that going into next year if he returns, which I think, and hopefully he will.
Yeah, back in 90, you and Herman, the famous more to more connection, you guys were the leading pass combo in the country, I think, all from wire to wire, if I'm not mistaken. But you both finished in the top 10 in the Heisman voting. What did you guys talk about that much during the season?
Not at all. You know, guys would joke, and but we just downplayed it. And quite honestly, we didn't even know. Herman didn't even realize that he was even being considered until the actual ceremonies, and the numbers came out, and we saw that he was six. And but you know, I think the best way to go about, the best approach is to just to downplay it. If accolades come, I've always said, if whatever accolades come for individuals, it's if that person is a good leader, they're going to always put the team first. That philosophy is always going to be the initial thoughts.
Blue Ridge Bank is the proud sponsor of the Jerry Ratcliffe Show and JerryRatcliffe.com. Founded in 1893, Blue Ridge Bank has more than a century of customer-based service, but is forward-thinking and features digital banking free and available 24/7. CEO Brian Plum and his team are strong supporters of UVA Athletics. And check this out. Blue Ridge Bank is home of the $100,000 jackpot drawing to one lucky customer every year. How can you beat that? Banking smarter, simplified. Blue Ridge Bank's mission is strong customer service. Make Blue Ridge Bank your bank today. Visit mybrb.com for more information.
You were third or fourth in the Heisman voting?
Yeah, the Ty Detmer won it. Rocket Ishmael was two. Bieniemy was three, and I was four. Two, three, and four, we were all there at the ceremony. Ty Detmer was actually playing in a game in Japan or Hawaii. David Klinger was fifth. Herman was sixth.
Yeah. Well, they got it wrong. you and Herman got two of my three votes. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wasn't George third in his year? Did he rub that in on you at all, Sean?
No, it's funny. I think you are absolutely correct. I think you're right about that. But yeah. No, I don't think I realized it until after the fact.
Yeah, he was third. I don't know who won it his year either, but I have to look it up. But I'm sure he was proud of you, both of you guys, for doing that. I think in his day, the Heisman wasn't as big a deal as another quarterback award. I can't even remember which one it was, but I guess in the 60s started to grow in popularity with Staubach and some of those guys.
Right.
What about this weekend, Sean? It's a special weekend for every Wahoo and gobbler, we'll call them. What do you think about this team's chances going in? Obviously they broke the streak 2 years ago and had a very disappointing showing in Blacksburg last year. I was shocked that it was a blowout like that. But time to get a little revenge that a little bit. I think last year's team was burned out by the end of the season. But
yeah, COVID. I'm sure COVID played a role last year. This year, really no excuses. I think this offensively, this team is playing better than any team in the ACC. And Virginia Tech's struggling. So, you know, we can't feel bad for them. They're going through a leadership change. It's going to be interesting to see what those players, you know, how they come out and fight. It's always tough when there's a change in leadership because, you know, sometimes you don't think the players will show up. But I think this rivalry means a lot to them. They have a lot of Virginia guys on their roster. So I think they're going to come. They're going to fight hard. You know, their interim coach was a former player there. So it's going to be interesting. I think our guys will be ready. They know the significance now, particularly these kids who've been on the roster for 2, 3, and 4 years. They know the importance of the Commonwealth Club, the Commonwealth Cup. So it's going to be interesting, but I think our guys will be ready. I think they're a little disappointed about last week having an opportunity to play in the Coastal, but this game just got really important because it could be a huge step and where we're going in a bowl game and also momentum for next year.
Yeah, 7-5 looks a whole lot better than 6-6 to bowl people.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Tech, of course, is fighting for its bowl life. They have to win this game to go to a bowl. It seems to me, for some reason, Sean, and I could be wrong on this, but it just seems to me that over the years, and I'm sure there are exceptions, but it seems like the Tech guys just take this game a little more seriously than Virginia. What's your feeling on that? You may disagree, and that's fine.
Well, no. If you just look at the way it's been played the last couple of years, it's easy to kind of gather that, maybe dissect that. Being from Southwest Virginia and going up there a lot when I was in high school, I know the importance of a guy staying in the state and playing for a state school. So I think there's a lot of guys on that roster, on that team, who they there's a sense of pride that, hey man, I stayed in state. I'm playing for a power school in the ACC. It's, you know, in the state of Virginia. So there's a lot of that, but I think our guys are starting to grasp that. So, but I can easily see how over the past couple of years, their guys have sensed that, you know, it's more of a, it's been more of a state championship for them, it seems like, than it has been for our guys. You know, we have some guys from different parts of the country. So I can see how it may be portrayed as the game means more to them. But I think our staff and some of our leaders of our team have done a good job of stressing the importance of this game. And so I don't think you'll see any lack of effort. I think you'll see a lot of emotion, a lot of enthusiasm from our guys knowing the importance of the game this weekend.
A couple of things that have bugged me over the past, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, maybe 10 years going back, is that I think if it's this game, it's the last game of the season, it's your rival, you don't hold anything back as a right. coach or a player. I haven't been happy with some of the strategies maybe that Virginia has used in this game. They just seem to too conservative at times and maybe not throw out the whole playbook and all out effort to win the game. Maybe I'm misperceiving that, but that's one of the perceptions out there. You can't hold anything back in this game, right?
No. And I don't think you'll get a sense of that this weekend.
No, I don't either.
I think our guys are super psyched. I think one of the best ways to get over a loss is to start, you know, realize the importance of the next game. And I think the Pittsburgh game will be behind them and they'll be focused on, hey, how do we get that Commonwealth Cup and take the state championship back?
Yeah, I agree. I think this weekend they won't hold anything back because they really haven't all year. So with this right. kind of a defense. Chris?
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that you know, maybe 2018, it was almost like they Jerry, your point was that maybe the there wasn't enough emphasis on this game. In 2018, the whole beat Tech thing Bronco was instilling, you know, the clock up in Brian Hall that counted down the days and minutes and that kind of thing to the game. And then they came out in the first half of that game, and boy, they just played like so tight. It was 14-0 at halftime. Then they opened up. And so maybe learning not to overemphasize the game. It's tough. Sean, it's got to be tough to have enough emotion, but not too much emotion when you're playing a rivalry game like this.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one thing we've learned about this team this year is you know, they can get down 14-21-0 and come back like that. So I don't think there'll be any nervousness if they get off to a rocky start. But I think if they get off to a super fast start, I don't think they'll ease up. I think that will continue to build throughout the game.
Yeah, I think a lot of that comes from Armstrong. He's really a fiery guy.
Yeah.
He makes a mistake, he cursing to himself as he walks off the field.
Right.
Reminds me a little bit of two other guys, Bryce Perkins and yourself, that wouldn't accept anything but the best. And I think that's one thing they got going in their corner. The one thing he has missing that you two guys had were you led Virginia to ACC championships, and that's a big deal. And I'm sure that's something that it may be in his future next year. But you got to have that kind of fire to be the leader of the team.
Absolutely, no doubt.
Yeah. Anything else, Chris? You got?
No, this has been great talking to Sean. I was a first year Sean at UVA in 1990. My first game as a student was the Clemson game. I'm sure that just amazing to being a part of that. The 3 weeks of number one. I'm married to a Hokie. I always remind her that we've been number one and they haven't been in that sport.
Wow. So,
thank you for that. If nothing else, thank you for that, Sean.
No, that's a good memory, man. I really appreciate that. Love that refresher always.
Oh, I wanted to ask you one more thing. How much did you enjoy the I can't remember what the name of it was now, the recent documentary about the 90 season?
Oh,
the
that was fabulous.
We're number one.
Chris Clayton talked about that recently. It was fabulous. We filmed about 7 or 8 months ago in the summer, and we all knew it was going to be special because we had a great time filming with the Georgia Tech guys. So it was a wonderful special. Really loved it.
That was one of the better documentaries I've seen. Some documentaries don't seem to tell the whole story, but they got behind the story in this one, and so well done. But if listeners out there haven't seen it, and you may not if you don't have the ACC network.
Right.
Thank you, Comcast.
Right.
I would advise you to watch it if you can somehow. But what was it like hanging out with the Georgia Tech guys after all these years? That had to be pretty cool.
We've all stayed in touch, and so it was really cool. They were surprised. We knew we were going to burst in on their portion of the interview, so it was really neat. We were all excited. We left midday and came back that evening so that we could film that part, and that was probably the most fun we've had. You know, reconnected with Marco Coleman, Sean Jones, Ken Swilling, and Scott Sisson. That was really neat.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they didn't know you guys were showing up.
Nah, they didn't know. They had no clue.
I still like the line you gave them when they asked you about, I guess, a halftime, and you said, we thought it was going to be a blowout. And the Georgia Tech guys looked at each other like, what?
Yeah, they asked the question. They said, what were you thinking? I said, well, we think it was going to be a blowout.
Well, I was thinking the same thing up in the press box.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, Sean, for taking part in
the meeting. Thank you guys, man. Appreciate it.
Great reminiscing with you and
absolutely
sharing your insight and all your knowledge of Virginia football. We appreciate it. And good luck fundraising.
Appreciate that. I'll pop up in the press box Saturday.
Okay. Be looking forward to seeing you.
All right.
Have a great rest. Have a great Thanksgiving. We'll see you Saturday.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show. Get the latest on the Hoos, basketball, football, and more online at jerryratcliffe.com or at augustafreepress.com.